Ocelli Effect.
I'm a big fan of the show.
Chuck Ocelli, and he's been known for many years as a blind JFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassinations, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media.
Chuck O'Kelly!
It is the 20th day of June, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar anyway, and this indeed is the O'Kelly Effect, broadcast live from the facilities of O'Kelly.com, also replayed and carried by other networks. So we do appreciate you for tuning in tonight. Certainly, if you're catching this further on down the stream via your Fondle Slab of choice, your applicable application, you are equally welcome. There is a live chat room at O'Kelly.com, and I encourage you to go there too. So it is Woden's Day, as it were, because it is the middle of the week, and that is the root of the name for Wednesday. And you know, this is the kind of thing I say all the time. And why do I do that? Well, my guest tonight might have a little something to do with the fact that I'm constantly breaking down language, taking a look at things, and even, according to current events, arguing with people over policy versus law. I wonder who inspired me to do that. Jordan Maxwell is here, and he is not a mentor to me as our friend Mr. Matt, Jeffrey Matt, said on Friday that Jordan is a mentor and a friend and somebody who has inspired all of his work. Jordan has not inspired all of my work, but he has absolutely been a tremendous influence over my ability to open my eyes to the world around me. And of course, if you don't know who Jordan Maxwell is, stop listening to my show. Go search him out on the internet. Take a listen to a couple of hours of things that he's done over the past, 50 years. And get yourself familiar, then come back and join us, okay? Jordan, how you doing tonight?
Well, I think we'll find out soon enough. I think I'm okay, and thank you for being on this show.
Oh, listen, it is a pleasure for me to have you here. I am I'm always grateful. And I want to begin by talking to you about Jeffrey, because he's an interesting guy. And I can see where all of his work in one way or another has been influenced by you directly. You can hear hints, like I said, in me breaking certain things down and constantly
well,
having
Jeffrey,
that argument.
But Jeffrey has been a very long time dear friend, and he and I talk continually. If he's not calling me, I'm calling him, and because he lives in Canada and I'm of course in northern the north of Arizona, and so but we talk continually, and he's always been a very dear friend. And he says I'm his teacher and his mentor. Well, I been talking to him for years, so but I felt that he was so interesting and had so many fascinating ideas about how to look at the occult world we live in, the hidden wisdom and the hidden knowledge, and he's very good at that. So that's why I wanted to try and have him on my show. So I think I had him on my show about a half dozen times, and he's really interesting, and people are picking up on the things he's talking about. So that's why I was very happy to see that he was able to get on your show too, and I thank you for that. And I think Jeffrey has a lot to say and a lot of interesting material, so you can just go on the web and type in Jeffrey's name, Jeffrey Matt, M-A-T-T-E. And if it, there should be some stuff on the YouTube by now, but I want to thank him for giving me a mention on when he was on. So, and well, thank you for having him on.
Yeah, no, he's great. And if you go to jeffreymatt.com, which is spelled jeffreymatte.com, if you go there, you can see his work. And but we're not going to spend all of our time talking about Mr. Matt tonight, because I want to talk to you about some other things.
Yep.
And also, I'm going to link this together a little bit, because we were talking about the messaging that is contained in colors, believe believe it or not, Jordan. And yep. This is one of those very basic sort of elements out there that a lot of people take for granted, you know, when it comes to advertising, when it comes to the presentation of corporate logos of all sorts, whether they be mm-hmm. under the seal of a government or they be under the seal of an allegedly private organization. Yep. We were talking about the language of colors there. And yep. he remarked about the color scheme of my website, which is very much, you know, black background with white being the lettering. And my name on the website is in white. And he said, you know, that means that you're offering yourself out to people, and the black is meant to be taken seriously. And a lot
of
people...
there is a science. There is a science to it. I mean, you know, and even in politics, if you're going to learn about how politics works, you have to take a political science class. It's a science. And a science implies that there's a whole method that's been established, and you stay with the method. You stay with the science. You don't go out and do something that you know, into a territory you've never been to before. You stay in within the science. So we have a political science, communication science, and there's a science to the color schemes that the human beings use. I mean, red always, you know, this is why communism was called reds, because red represented violence, violent emotions, bloodshed, terror in the street, and so that's why they were called reds, not only because of that, but because the Rothschilds, that's Roth in German is red, and Schild is shield, so the Rothschilds, or the Red Shield, of communism was financed by the Jewish family of the Rothschilds in England. And so color schemes and colors in relation to corporate logos and businesses and emotional connections between peoples around the world, colors are very important. So, yeah, it's a whole science. I'm not really that interested in it, but I understand it enough to understand the concept. But I'm into other things, but that is interesting when you start looking at the colors.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of what you said is all true. And the interesting thing to me is that Jeffrey was very patient with me, and we went through the multiple layers, because this is the thing that a lot of people miss when they're listening to some of your presentations, when they're listening to some of other people's presentations, simply because red is a communication of a particularly intense emotion and all that, that yep. doesn't mean that that's the only thing that red no. represents, right? So
that's
there
right.
are different levels of communication. Now, to the general public, there is a communication, right? To the people, if you will, there is
right.
a communication, and there is a way to seize upon emotion and certain psychological triggers that are there that have been trained into us one way or another. And then again, there is a language that is also being spoken between different groups internationally and on the world stage, so that at a quick glance, the intentionality, the roots of something can be easily understood by not only the colors, but the symbols, the names. These things don't occur by accident. Now, certainly, yeah. there are situations where, you know, let's just say, Jordan, you and I didn't do any of this kind of stuff, and we decided we were going to start a company where we sold potatoes. Now, we might call it the Jor Chuck, you know, potato company to mix
yep.
together the two names. And this is an organic thing that we put together to represent ourselves, because we put ourselves into the business. That's one thing. But if you ever notice, those organic creations do not begin with the coded color and coded symbols that are out there for these larger corporate entities once they sort of graduate away mm-hmm. from the root business. And in this way, there are multiple layers, and there's an evolution in the communication, in the symbols, and in the words chosen and the language spoken. Am I right or wrong?
No, absolutely. And I would take it a step further, because I remember many years ago, I don't know if it was in the 70s, early 70s, I was invited to a lecture in Santa Monica by a black professor. I think he's from Chicago University, and he was giving a special invitation-only lecture, and I was invited. and he was talking about the different gangs in America, and especially in Los Angeles, since he was in L.A., and he was talking about the different colors of the gangs, and then the importance of understanding when you're in a particular section of the city, you need to, you know, if you're wearing a wrong color, it might get you in trouble. And so you need to stay out of those sections where color dominates, for the gangs that run that area of the city. And so, therefore, when people you trust and they've been friends for years, and one day they make a slip up and show you who they really are and say something or do something that really you were not expecting, we say they were showing their true colors, meaning they were hiding who they were behind one color. But then when they showed what they're really thinking, they're showing their real colors. So that's why, you know, gangs use certain colors, and so does the big gangs that run the country. We call them Democrats and Republicans, and that's red and blue. And so they divide us up in the country between the red states and the blue states.
And I think it's no coincidence, Jordan, that the L.A. gangs, the L.A.-based gangs anyway, which have spread nationwide at certain points, used exactly the same color scheme. You have the reds representing the bloods, and some people would say, well, duh, red, blood, okay. But the Crips, or, you know, the opposition party just happened to adopt blue, you know. And it just seems like, and this is something I started to touch on with Jeffrey just a bit, because we were talking about the color blue, and I said, you ever notice, though, that there's a continual thing going on between red and blue, and then also how many flags across the globe are out there being the standard for various countries, which contain not only red and blue, but white. And that's not
right.
Just the American and the British flags, which are the most recognizable right away, but, I mean, even if you look at the Russian Federation's flag today and various other nations' flags
today. The Russian Federation is red, white, and blue.
It sure is.
And ours is red, white, and blue. And that red, white, and blue can be traced back to Solomon's Temple in the Jewish mythology. In the mythology of the Jews, there was a king called King Solomon, and there was in fact no King Solomon, but in the theology or the mythology of the Jewish religion, there was a king called King Solomon, and in King Solomon's tomb, or his temple, the colors were red, white, and blue. I read that a long time ago, but then it was picked up by the French, and the French Grand Orient Freemasons picked that up, and it became the French colors were red, white, and blue. And then because of the French Masonic Order helping to establish the United States, for the United States Masonic Order, they gave us the Statue of Liberty, which incidentally is not the Statue of Freedom, it's the Statue of Liberty. Liberty means you ask permission. But the Statue of Liberty given to us by the French Grand Orient Temple Masons, which was their colors were red, white, and blue. So the whole concept of using colors to tell messages is replete throughout history. That's a whole story about why Rome, in the ancient Roman Empire, everything was red. And in Greece, everything was blue. And so it's all a very interesting, you know, general subject about how colors are used. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's fascinating. And Jeffrey can talk to you about it for hours.
Well,
but
sure.
I understand enough.
Of course you do. And, I mean, this is the thing, is that when it comes to the symbols all around us, you would have to understand the color scheme. I mean, you know, to understand that the Roman Empire utilized the eagle, and this is the part of the standard for the United States. I'm holding up air quotes for those of you at home.
Yeah.
You know, at this time, is not a mere coincidence. There is a reason.
No. As a matter of fact, the eagle has always, that's spelled A-L-W-A-Y, always been a symbol in the ancient world, meaning the same thing. As far back in the history as you can trace, the human presence on Earth, they have always used an eagle to represent the sun, S-U-N, that glowing orb that comes up in the morning that brings light into the world. And so the eagle represents the light of the world, the coming of the sun that will light up the earth. And light is, of course, in Latin, lucius, which gives us illuminati, because it illuminates the earth. And so the illuminati are the holders of intellectual and spiritual light, and their symbol has always been the eagle. And today we have the bald-headed eagle, which is American symbol, and the Romans had the eagle, the Greeks, the French. I mean, all over the world, the ancient world used the eagle. And so there's a whole world of symbolism that most people were not aware of. I started talking about this idea of the hidden significance of symbols. As far back as 1960, I was giving lectures in Los Angeles to little Mickey Mouse groups like, mom and pop, bookstores and library rooms and little stuff. But I was fascinated with the stuff I was learning at 19 years old and 20 years old about the symbolism in government and symbols on flags and coats of arms and heraldry and how our whole world is dominated by symbols. And those symbols can be deadly if you're in the wrong gang, or if you're in a war, and you're wearing one kind of symbol representing your country, you better watch out what you're doing if you're going behind enemy lines. And so you better take the swastika off and act like you're an American if you're in American territory. Why? Because that symbol on your arm will get you killed real fast. And so I realized, even at 20 years old, that the world is run by secret societies. Secret people are using symbols and words and terms, catchphrases, and colors to manipulate the human race and to communicate with each other behind the scenes. So this is why, with the President of the United States, I was watching just the symbolism. And when Trump was giving a speech, an important speech, he would wear a very, very red tie. Red on a tie for a man speaking is implied power. He's wearing a red tie, and it's talking about blood, revolution, important stuff. And then later on, if he's talking to a political group or whatever, he would wear a blue tie. And what's that all about? And then sometimes you'll see the president wearing a red tie and the vice president wearing a blue. Those things are not by chance. I mean, just like Hollywood, you don't go into a movie wearing whatever it was you thought would be all right. No, they have actual costume people who are paid big money to make sure you're wearing exactly the color glasses or the exactly color shirt. It's all part of a science to communicate things in a movie. So I know that when you see the president, you see all these important executives on television at night in the news, they're all wearing certain colors. They all know what they're doing. It's a secret society that runs the world. And all kinds, you've got different groups of people from different areas of the world. The Chinese have the Tongs criminal societies. Japan has another name for them. But each one of the countries has organized criminal societies.
The Yakuza in Japan.
Yeah, Yakuza. And then one time, Yakuza, the Japanese mafia, owned the Bank of America. And you know, when the Italians came over here, the mafia, It was old man Giannini who opened up the Bank of America, which was telling you the mafia money is the Bank of America. And then, but the colors, and even today, the Bank of America's swastika they're using, the four pointed square, which actually is traced back to the swastika, The color is blue, and this is why if you're working for a living with a corporation, you'll call a blue-collar worker. Or if you're one of the executives that are running the big mess, then you are wearing a white collar. And so, again, the whole story balances on the fact that there's a whole hidden world of symbols and terms and words that's been established before your grandmother was born.
Mm.
And so you have to go along to get along, because that's the way it is.
Well, you know, along those lines, Jordan, I have an odd question that I don't believe I've ever asked you or anybody, but it's one that has rattled around in my mind quite often. You talked about the symbols and the colors on the neckties, but it seems odd to me, though, if you sort of, you know, take a step back and you examine it objectively. Why is it that neckties are even part of this costume, I wonder? Like, in other words, you know, a necktie is one accoutrement.
There's an easy answer for that.
Okay, go ahead.
Neckties are referred to as cable toes. A cable toe in Freemasonry is when you are being initiated into the Society of Freemasonry. They will put around your neck something that very closely resembles the hangman's noose, and they put the hangman's noose around you and they lead you, and it's called a cable toe. And so if you're going to be officially in the spin of things and in the business world, then you wear a cable toe that shows that you are part of the corporation mentality. You're part of the business. So when people talk with you in a company and you wearing a tie, that means you're an official wearing the cable toe of business, of corporations. It's a tie. And so that's why, you know, you will see sometimes in movies, somebody's trying to get your attention, they'll grab you by the tie and pull you up in the face. And so that's what a tie is. It's a cable toe. It's like a hangman's noose.
Yeah, see, that's the way I've always interpreted it, and it's strange to me because it seems rather impractical. Because to me, I think of a corporate interaction very much in a warfare kind of way, right? I think about it sort of like, you know, those who would read things like, Sun Tzu's The Art of War and trying to apply it to their business models, things like that.
Yep.
I consider it like to be a conflicted area. You're constantly, you know, dealing and wheeling and trying to get through certain things. And I mean, I worked for one of the largest companies in the world. I worked for ExxonMobil at one point, and certainly I had ties and things, but I always thought to myself that this was one of the most impractical pieces of clothing that was ever devised, because it was just like a vulnerability to me. Because at any moment, if you're not paying very good attention to what's in front of you, somebody could grab a hold of that sucker and they could use it to injure you, to direct you.
Well, they grab it and pull you up in their face. They can grab you by the cable toe, by the tie, and it's a hangman's noose around your neck.
Yeah. I mean, this is why, by the way, even when I did a public presentation not long ago, I did not wear a tie. I refused to wear a tie anywhere. I'm not going to comport with this particular system. And
yep.
I know that's a personal choice. And listen, I know you look good in a suit and tie. I've seen you in a suit.
Oh, yeah. I haven't worn a tie in 40 years. I mean, you know, I'm not part of anything anymore.
Well, no, but when you were younger, you looked real good in a suit and tie. I've seen pictures of you much younger. And yes, you did have at one point a nice suit and everything. But I refuse to comport with any of that stuff at this point in time in my life, because I know I'm not part of that business. You understand?
Yep, I know.
So
me too.
You know, so that's the way it is. But I watched people, you know, making presentations, and they were well dressed and they were in nice suits, and I'm saying, you know, hey, okay, I get it, but I just cannot get on board with that idea, that tie. I never liked it. I don't like anything around my neck, you know, that I did not place there. I will put some jewelry on, but even that's kind of an odd thing where, you know, you adorn yourself occasionally, and I only wear silver, I don't wear gold. But anyway, that's a whole other reason why I do that.
yeah, I know. Well, again, this is all part of the system that we live under. And the system will decide how it works and how it doesn't work. And like George Carlin says, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And so the big club has decided that if you're going to be in the club, which means if you're going to be a corporate mind, you've got to think like a corporation. And if you think like a businessman, then you know you're just one small spoke in the big wheel called the World Corporation. And so you tell everybody else around you and other corporate members who you are by the color tie and by the colors you wear and by the way words and terms that you use in business. So it's all a very big science, and it takes many years to understand and figure it out. But I mean, I'm just amazed today. I truly am amazed how many websites there are talking about the corporation called the U.S. as opposed to the United States of America Republic. And I was talking about some of that stuff back in the 80s, in the mid-80s I was talking, and then especially in the late 80s and early 90s I started doing a lot of radio talking about the corporation. And so most people today are finally waking up to the fact that the United States today is not the United States of America. The United States of America officially founded back in 1776, 1780, was one thing. That was one political movement back in 1776. But today, we're not living in the United States of America. That's gone. It still exists on paper. It still exists in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania. But it's not the same as the United States today. And Washington, D.C. is the District of Columbia. And it has a whole connotation to that, colors of red, white, and blue. The word United States is totally different than the United States of America. And boy, when you get into that subject, that is one hell of an eye-opener when you find out what you are really living under today if you say that you're living in the U.S., United States. Because you're not living in the United States of America. And the reason why is very simple. Because in the 1860s, there was a huge bloody revolution. We called it the Civil War. And we talk about how incredibly bloody and violent the Civil War was. Well, after the Civil War in the early, late 1860s, early 1870, the Civil War had killed so many people in this country that America, the land, the North American land, was still here. And there's millions of people living on that land. But we were anything but united. We were the most disunited on the planet. We just had a major civil war. And so we were not united anymore. So then the politicians decided, well, then what are we going to do? You still have millions of people here who want to eat and live, but there's no longer a United States of America. We're not united. Half of this country hates the other half. So we're not united. So they decided to create a corporation, a company. And so they incorporated the company in Delaware, which is a Delaware corporation. It's called the United States Corporation. So today, you are living under a company, a corporation. And part of that corporation, they decided that if you are going to be here in this North America and working, then you're going to be an employee of that corporation. And because of that, you are now going to be a corporation yourself. They will make you a corporation under their corporate papers. And so what was founded in the 1870s was a municipal corporation, a company. They filed papers to found a new corporation called United States Company. and therefore, if you're going to be an employee of that United States corporation today, you say you are a U.S. citizen. You're not an American. An American has certain inalienable rights. You don't have no rights, period. Period. At the end of the sentence, you have no rights at all, period. And so that's why to use the term the civil rights movement is ludicrous to any educated person. It is not a civil right. There is no such a thing as a civil right. A right is something you are born with. You own and you are born with it. But a civil right means it's the civil gave you the right. Well, yeah, but the time, but if the civil gave you the right, the civil can take it away from you just as easy.
Right.
So there is no civil right. That's why today we have American Civil Liberties Union. Oh, not the American Civil Rights Union, but the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU. So now we understand there's a big difference between a right and a liberty. That's why today we have a Statue of Liberty, but it had to be put in the harbor. It was not put on the land in America. It was put in water. Why? Because liberty is what a sailor gets when he pulls into port on a ship. He has to go aboard. He has to go on land. He doesn't just get off and walk off and go onto land. No, you ask the captain for permission. You don't walk anywhere, son. You are under absolute sovereign authority of the Navy. You don't go anywhere unless you ask permission. And so you ask permission, and then the captain, he may, but then he may not. But if he gives you permission, that's like your dad giving you the car till midnight. You want to go out on a date? Yeah, okay, I'm giving you permission to use the car. But you better be home by 11:59, and I didn't say 12:05. You better be back because I'm giving you permission because you asked for permission. So now, that's a civil liberty today is what you have. You have no civil rights. Period.
Correct. And I use the word correct instead of right. Here's the thing. You know, and the reason why this is a relevant conversation right now is because, you know, people are arguing about current events, and they're arguing over the difference between a policy and a law. Now, first of all,
I must understand.
Oh, yeah, I know you will. But first, we need to understand the difference between the types of law before we get into that discussion, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you know, and
well, first of all,
go ahead.
Let me ask you, why do you have police today? The police are, you know, why do we have police? I mean, when you go back and watch the old movies of the 30s and 40s, and especially the old cowboy movies, you never have police. You know, the cowboys are riding into town with their guns on their hip, and they go in the bar and have a few drinks, and if there's an argument breaks out, if you can't settle it like gentlemen, well, then you can settle it another way. Go out in the street. And if you go out in the street, there's two guys looking at each other in front of the sheriff's department. All the people of the city are watching. And they make movies about it, Call High Noon. They make movies about what Americans could do back in the cowboy days, back in the 1700s. You go out in the street, and somebody's not going home tonight.
Right.
And so the idea was is that you got a beef with somebody else, well, settle it. If you can't settle it by talking it out or pay somebody or whatever it is, well, then go out in the street and settle it now and get it over with. And so it's called dueling, but dueling was officially all right. There was no law against that in America. Why? Because when the United States of America, the Republic, was founded, a part of the founding policies or a part of the founding documents, each man, woman, and child in this North American land was considered a sovereign. A sovereign is a king or a queen.
Right.
And so that's why, you know, when in the old cowboy movies you see the marshal or the sheriff come riding out to some guy's ranch, and the guy comes out with a shotgun and he puts his hand up and tells the sheriff, "Wait a minute, sheriff, don't come on my property. What are you doing here on my property?" That's why, because he owned that property and he was a sovereign. That's his property, and you come on that property, he could kill you. Why? Because that's the way United States of America was founded. Every man is the king of his kingdom, and his home was his kingdom. And so he can defend it any way he pleases. So if you want to mess with him, you better bring a gun, and you may not be going home. Why? Because he was a sovereign. So when you begin to understand in 1870, after the Civil War, there was no longer a United States of America. So therefore, you no longer were under the Constitution that provided that you were a sovereign and you could be your own man and prevent, you know, do whatever you want with your life and your property. That's gone. That's no longer around. So now we have a corporation. Well, a corporation is like Ford Motor Company or Baskin Robbins or any other corporation or company. Well, corporations cannot make law. They do not make a law, but they do have their particular policies. So when you go into a company and you buy something, you want to take it back, and they say, no, we can't do that. We don't take this back. Why? Well, because it's written in stone. God's law says, no, there is no God's law. It's just a policy. Our policy is that we don't take the stuff back. That's just our policy. And so if it's just your policy, then we today are living in a corporation, so we have policy makers. They're not law makers. We don't have any laws. We have policies. But to back up that policy, that's made by, incidentally, politicians. Politicians make the policy. But how are you going to back that policy up? What police? The police back up the policy that the politicians make for the corporation. So therefore, today, the police are just here to make sure you damn well appreciate and understand the policy. And you better go along with it, or the cops are going to take a board out and beat your brains out. It's to make sure you are in compliance with the corporation's policy. It's not the law. Ford Motor Company cannot make a law that the world must abide by. No, God can do that, not Ford Motor Company. Mm. But Ford Motor Company can, if they're paying you and you're an employee, they can inflict upon you what you must do. You must be here at 7 o'clock and you must take off at this hour and you must do this. You must wear this clothes. So, but these are not God's laws. They're just Ford policies. So we have a corporation running our supposedly country. It's not a country, it's a corporation. And incidentally, if you come across the border into this country we call the United States Corporation, if you come across the border into this country and you are looking for work and you find work, but you don't tell the government you're here, they don't care if you are here making money. What they care about is if you're an undocumented worker. They want your documents to know that you're here. Why? Because if you're here and you're making money that the corporation prints, the corporation called the Federal Reserve prints that money. And if you are making the corporation money and you're not telling them you're here, then you are going to have what the corporation can do is they can put a lien on you. It's like a mechanic's lien or a carpenter's lien. You know, if I paint your house and you don't pay me, I can put a lien on your property, which means until you pay me, you can't do nothing with this property. Right. Why? Because you owe me money. So therefore, if you are here illegally and making money, the corporation in Washington, D.C. is a company, and so the corporation puts a lien on you, and now you are referred to as an alien. No, a lien has been put on you, so therefore we call you an alien. No, a lien. You are carrying a lien on from the corporation, so you are an alien. And so once you understand how this government really works and who you actually are and what the words really mean, which most people don't seem to care about because it's not really important, it's got nothing to do with Paris Hilton or all the silly nonsense of basketball and football and kickball and soccer ball and all the rest of it. But once you wake up and find out how this country really works and who owns this place called the United States Corporation, And how is it that you are a corporation? Well, you're a corporation because you're a business. And that's why if you're going to get married, you've got to have a license to get married. Why? Because you're a company. And so if I see you coming out of a restaurant one night, 2 o'clock in the morning with some woman, and the next day I say to you, you know, that woman you were with last night, she's bad company. And you say, mind your own business. Then I find out you're going to get married and she's going to be your partner. Company, business, partner, we're talking business. That's why you have to have a license to get married, because it's just business. You don't think so? If it don't work out, you're not going to God, you're going to court. You better bring your car, your money, and everything you think you own, because you don't own nothing.
That's
you better
the
bring
truth.
It all to court, because it's just a business. And now your partner, who you were sleeping with, your partner is now suing you. And they're going to get one half the company. And so that's why it's a big world of strange words and terms and symbols. And you put your money in a bank. And why do you put your money in a bank? Because that's where that's what you have on both sides of a river. There's a river bank. And what does a river bank do? Well, it directs the flow of the currency. Because your money is a liquid asset. It's water. I mean, we could talk for hours about how the United States today is a corporation, how all of your business and where it comes from, what the words mean. Boy, when you wake up and find out how this country actually works and how it is connected to an international secret societies of banking and mafiosi, gangsters, organized crime, it's scary. That's why I am amazed at how many people do not realize how this world really works. And I've been trying since 1960, giving lectures in Los Angeles at mom-and-pop grocery stores and mom-and-pop bookstores, etc., trying to explain to people how the world works. It doesn't work the way you think it does. So if you're going to go to court, you better understand how you play basketball on a court. You play tennis on a court. When you go to court, how do you play tennis on a court? You play with a racket. Wake up. You need to understand the world you live in. And so many people don't, and that's why the whole of America and the world in general are in trouble. We're in violence. We're in conflict. Blood sacrifices, marriages breaking up, children are on narcotics, men are into corruption. The whole world is in trouble because, like the scripture says, my people are dying from a lack of knowledge. And it's just amazing how much people don't know about what's going on in this country and how this country is leading the whole world into a darkness that you are not going to believe real soon when it finally comes out. Who's been running this country since 1870? You had no idea in the world about. So all I'd say is if you want to understand the world, you better go back and do your homework. So that's the name of that tune.
Well, you know what's funny about that is that some people do go back in history and start to read documents, and they misunderstand, you know, part of what's being said in those documents.
Well, of course.
And I'm going to seize upon one of the words that you very eloquently just broke down, which is alien, okay, or alien. And the thing is, there's this part of the Constitution, right, which talks about the unalienable rights. And here's the thing. That was memorialized, but it doesn't apply at this point.
That's right.
What it meant was, though, that there were rights that were granted to you by virtue of your creation. I mean, by your creator, obviously, but let's just take it to its core. If you had a creator, you were created. Therefore, you are a creation. So,
right. Quite
honestly, by virtue of your creation, so that we don't even argue about the creator.
Yeah,
all right.
Yep.
You were granted these things. They were memorialized. So this goes to a different type of law. And the funny thing is that as you stress about the policy enforcers that are out there on the streets today, which we call police, people often mislabel them again as law enforcement. They're not there to enforce laws.
No.
You know, none of these people in these uniforms are there to enforce laws. That's another thing interesting. When you work for a corporation, you wind up wearing a uniform. Now, we have the generalized uniform that, you know, Jordan was just talking about regarding the tie and the suit. But also, if you work on the lower levels, again, working for Exxon Mobil, right? And it wasn't Exxon Mobil.
That's right.
We had people that worked in the stores, right, who served the public, who had to wear the uniform of the corporation and carry the logo with them, carry the banner. And this is the same thing that goes on today. Now, part of the costume in the corporate political world where the policy enforcers lurk is to wear that suit, is to have that tie with a particular color on for a different purpose or whatever, also to put that interesting American flag on their lapel. This is all part of the uniform now.
That's precisely. Absolutely correct. And that's why the judge wears a black robe. He doesn't wear an orange or green. He wears a black robe. And why? Because, well, Catholic priests wear a black robe. And we are, we in America today are a Roman Catholic Vatican operation. And we, as they call the United States Corporation, that's a Roman Catholic organization. And so Washington, D.C., before we called it the District of Columbia, was called Rome. Go back in the history book, and you will see it was called Rome. And then why? Because it was in what we call Virginia. Comes from vagina. Comes from the virgin. Virgin, vagina, Virginia. And so Virginia is referring to the Blessed Mother, the Blessed Virgin, Virginia. And then there's Maryland, which is Maryland, the land of the Virgin Mary. Mm. So we have Maryland and Virginia, and all of this has to do with the Vatican and the Jesuits. And, of course, this is the new Rome, and Washington, D.C. is referred to as the new Rome. And then, of course, if you read the history books about how Caesar and under the Caesars of Rome, it says the Caesars would each morning go up on the hill. And now we know that the Roman government under the Caesars 2,500 years ago was on a hill in Rome, and that hill was called Capitoline Hill. And today we still have Caesar up on the hill. It's called Capitol Hill. No, Capitoline Hill in Rome. And so Caesar would go up onto Capitoline Hill, and he would officiate over the empire as God. And where would he officiate over the empire? At the Senate, the Roman Senate up on the hill. And today we still have the Roman Senate up on the hill. And today we still have the blabbermouth and the butt kissers for Rome and the Vatican behind kissers. They are still telling us on CNN Caesar went up on the hill today, and up on the hill, the Senate did this and that in the Senate. What you're talking about is the ancient Roman Empire.
And right.
Today,
now, I want to go deeper. I want to go deeper on that just for a second, because, you know, there might be some people who say that what Jordan is talking about is, you know, very anti-Christian, very anti-Catholic. But here's the thing I want people to understand, and that is that the symbolism of Mary being such a huge symbol is not actually part of Christianity.
Not at all.
It goes further back than that. And here's where you get the hints, by the way. We talked about justice here tonight. We talked about Columbia here tonight. We talked about this figure, the Virgin. All of these individuals are memorialized previously in religions that predate Christianity.
Of course they do. Of course they do. As a matter of fact, the Egyptian obelisk in Washington, D.C., anybody who understands Egyptian symbolism knows that an Egyptian obelisk, we call it Washington's Monument, but it's actually an Egyptian obelisk like the one that's in front of the Vatican. But we made that one. We made the Washington Monument. and it's the tallest Egyptian obelisk on the earth is the one we made in Washington, D.C. Well, an Egyptian obelisk represents the male erection. The male erection was referred to as the pictured as an obelisk in Egypt. So today we have the male erection, or Washington's greatest erection, it's called. Look in the dictionaries. Read the dictionaries and the understanding of symbols. Go to a library. Do something you've never done. Read a dictionary on symbols, and you will find that the Egyptian obelisk represents the male phallic, and it connects with the female ovaries, or the oval office. And so you're looking straight at the male phallic, directly connecting to the feminine oval office, or her ovaries, which creates the life of the new nation, the corporation called United States Corporation. And so that's why nothing in this country today reminds you of how America was founded, because it's not like America was founded. The founding of America died in 1860s during the Civil War officially. And so in 1870, there was a whole new government brought into play, and it was called a corporation, and therefore you are a corporation. Therefore you are a business, and your wife is a business, or your girlfriend is a business. And thank God your girlfriend's business is none of my business. And what I do in my bedroom is none of your business, because it's a corporation. We're all companies. And so I'm not privy to your private business, and you're not privy to my business, because, in fact, it's none of your business. So you get the idea? Anything you do is a business under corporate law. No, and so under corporate law, we are all living as a corporation, and we don't know it. We don't understand any of it. And it got nothing to do with basketball or Paris Hilton or any of the other nonsense we spend our time on, because nobody seems to really be interested in the real dark story of who you really are. And this is why you don't own nothing in the world. You don't own anything because you never paid for anything.
Well, and also,
that's a whole story.
You are owned, is what the bottom line is here.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
If a corporation brings another corporation into existence on paper, they are called what? A subsidiary.
That's precisely the point. You are a subsidiary to a foreign corporation called United States Corporation. So that's, and you don't own anything, incidentally. This is why you don't own anything. And this is, it's a big story. I mean, if you had 8 hours, we could sit around here and talk about all the words in banking and insurance companies that actually own and run the banks from behind the scenes that you don't know anything about, and the different amendments of the Constitution and what they were all about, and how the banks actually run the country. And all over the world, there's two basic kinds of law. And that's a whole story in itself. Going back to the Roman Empire, the Romans understood there were two kinds of law, a law of the land and the law of water. And today, there's still, we talk about the law of the land. Oh, well, this and that, well, you know, that's the law of the land. No, law of the land in relation to the law of the sea. That's why you make that designation. It's the law of the land, or the law of the sea, the law of money. Because the law of the sea is the law of water. And we say money goes through your hands like water. No, money is considered water. Legally and lawfully, around the world, banking law is maritime admiralty. Is called banking law. Because money is referred to as water. It's a cash flow of a liquid asset. Period. You don't understand money, then you don't understand water. And since you were 78% water, you came down your mother's birth canal, and her water broke, and therefore you came out to life. So in point of fact, whether you understand it or not, you are a maritime admiralty product. You came out of water. So you're a maritime product.
Well, if you go back to one of those courts like you were talking about when it's time to dissolve the partnership, you'll find out that your children are a product of the marriage. That is literally their legal definition. And, yeah.
That's right.
That's absolutely correct. One other interesting part about this, of course, you talked about how liquid assets work, and people define liquidity at all times. But, you know, we're almost at the end of this hour, and I'm going to go ahead and take a break. But the thing is, I want to leave people with this thought. And that is something that Jordan just said. And I love the way you slip these things in. Because if somebody's paying attention, they understand that you just explained that the law of banks, the law of finance, the law of all that, you know, a fiancé kind of sounds like a finance. Anyway, if you notice, there is that high concentration of liquid in the being, which is a man or a woman.
Right.
Well, seems to me like if currency is that which is traded, then it seems to me like people are currency as well. And I think we need to discuss that. Maybe even get into a little bit of how the system has been memorialized right in front of your face. Because if you take a look at the architecture in the Capitol area there, right, and you take a look at the way the Senate is laid out, the way the Congress, which, by the way, Congress, of course, is the proper term for sexual intercourse.
Right.
You know, and
the word commerce comes from sexual intercourse. It's called commerce. And Congress, the word Congress is sexual intercourse. And so look it up in a dictionary. Look it up in a law dictionary. Look up the word Congress. It will tell you sex between men and women is called Congress.
Absolutely.
Co-res and end up with Congress. And so we talk about, well, we're getting screwed by the Congress. That's what the word means, airhead.
Exactly. Jordan Maxwell is with me tonight, and we're going to continue this discussion in the next hour. I'll see how long I can hang on to him for, because I love talking to Jordan Maxwell. And if you are enjoying this presentation, you go to JordanMaxwellShow.com. JordanMaxwellShow.com, and you can learn a whole lot more and even get in on some other opportunities over there, as well as find out about the many things that Jordan has done over the years. But stick around and listen to the Ocelli Effect just a little more, because we're going to be right back. WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. The brilliant author of The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Hey there, it's Sunshine On, and I just wanted to stop by, say thanks to all you amazing listeners who are the Ocelli Effect of Inspiration, for your host Chuck Ocelli to remain free of paid corporate masters with ads that instill fear to sell products they want you to buy. Media's best independent network for guest interviews from the most unique perspectives. And yeah, my perspective's kind of unique, right? So anyway, I just wanted to say thank you so much for tuning in, and let's keep it all ongoing. You can join in by clicking the donate button. Together, you are the Ocelli Effect.
is about goddamn time they wake up. Hell, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jolden Maxwell on the Ocelli Effect. For more pods with Jolden and Chuck, search Ocelli.com, along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck Ocelli on Ocelli.com. Thanks for listening.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. Chuck Ocelli.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now here at Ocelli.com. Do appreciate you for tuning in and listening. We just played a spot during the break, which you guys know I play from time to time and like to mix in at least a few times a week, where I play a little bit of a previous appearance by tonight's guest on the show. And I think it's the first time he's heard it. Jolden Maxwell is with me. Go to JoldenMaxwellShow.com. Make sure you go to JoldenMaxwellShow.com because there are other people out there that are trying to benefit from Jordan's work, which are using other places for people to go to. And this is the website of the man himself, JoldenMaxwellShow.com. Also, you're still doing your show on American Freedom Radio, right?
Yes, but I have not been able to really follow through on it as much as I really want to, because I've had so many problems in my life because of who I am and what I do, and so I really haven't been able to do much with it. But there's a lot already there. If you go on JordanMaxwellShow.com, and then you'll see that I'm doing a show with American Freedom Radio Network. But I really haven't done much with it in the last few months. But it's still there, and I do the best I can.
No, listen, so. And the archive alone is worth your time, especially if you've never heard Jolden before. But even if you have, listen, I on occasion, Jolden, to be honest with you, I'm not too proud to say that on occasion I brush up on things by taking a listen to some of your presentations from the past, not just the live lectures, which people can find on YouTube and things like that, but on occasion I go back over discussions that you and I have had. I hate listening to my own voice, but I do enjoy listening to yours. So,
well, I hate my voice, and I love listening to you.
Well, you know, this is a good match then.
Yeah.
See, you and I can have a conversation, and I almost was like, you know, maybe Jolden wants to go after an hour, and what he said to me during the break is that he enjoys talking to me, so we're going to continue on, and hopefully some of these things will catch you just right, you the listener out there, not you, Jolden, you the listener out there, so that you can begin to learn and open your mind and think for yourself a lot more, because at the end of the day, decoding all of this, which Jolden has spent, half century doing, is really the beginning of understanding the world around you. And you've repeated a lot of this material because it needed repetition. I mean, you, like you said in the beginning, you were talking to 5-10 people, and you know, nowadays you know very well that you're heard by many, many more, and even people who have heard maybe a similar discussion, although I try and make it a little different on this show with you, I gotta be honest. I try and take it into a slightly different direction and add things and even throw in like the question about the tie. I don't think I've ever heard you discuss the necktie before. you know, which is why I wanted to bring it in. And I knew you would have the answer, but the point was I wanted to bring it in because, listen, we'll give them some of the old information, we'll give them some new information, and we'll also just have a good time having a discussion because, you know what, I want to enjoy this while I do it as well. And that's what I try to do.
I appreciate that. And, you know, a lot of people tell me, I get a lot of emails saying, Jordan, you just keep repeating yourself. And I say, you damn right, I keep repeating myself. Because the idea is that I was talking about all of these subjects I'm talking about today. I was talking back in 1959, some 60 years ago. I was talking as a kid, 19-year-old kid, to little groups about the international Illuminati masters and how this stuff works behind the world scene. And today, now it is everywhere, with motion pictures talking about Da Vinci Code, in which the company that produced Da Vinci Code used a lot of my stuff, and I know because some of the writers who wrote for that movie told me so, and National Treasure and National Treasure 2, and History Channel, all of these different channels talking about Illuminati and secret societies and the secret orders of the world. And now the James Bond movie comes out with Spectre and all of the things I was talking about 60 years ago over and over and over again are now mainstream movies, television, books. People writing all over the world, people doing research all over the world on secret societies I was talking about 60 years ago.
You know,
well, yeah, I keep repeating myself, but look what it's done. Today, now the world is finally waking up to what I was talking about 60 years ago.
Well, see, now I want to talk to you about that, actually. That was the next, like, new piece of information I wanted to bring out because... Here's the thing. Yes, indeed, you are literally the forerunner, the vanguard of a lot of what has been discussed in the past, especially 10 years, I would say. It has certainly ramped up to a great intensity. Internationally, all over the world, we have the interconnectivity of the internet. It's a wonderful thing. It's a great tool if you use it properly, but... Mm-hmm. Here's the thing that I want to ask you about, and I want to get your personal reaction to this, because on the one hand, a great many people have been, I hate to use the term, you know, awake, have been awakened, have been, forget it, a few people have decided to open their eyes, Jordan, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right. And a good number of people have. I don't mean to say a few, but it's still not the majority. I get it. There are a lot of people that are educating themselves, thinking about these things in that way, and actually following the things that you've been laying out all these years. But there are also a great many people who have now decided to hijack this and utilize it to push other agendas, I think. That once they saw a success rate beginning to emerge in a portion of the population, you now see these wider discussions and the use of this stuff to make it look very much like the legitimate research and the legitimate work, but it is fraudulent. It's out there to push other agendas, and they've actually hijacked it. And this is
I cannot agree with you more. You're absolutely correct. And what you see is correct because I've been looking at it and seeing it myself. And I'm seeing it even probably more painfully than you are because I'm talking to people to try and help them and to wake them up. I'm not asking for anything. I'm just spending my whole life roaming around the country and in the last 20 years roaming around the world giving lectures on all of these secret mystical things that are going on in our presence, trying to help people to wake up, and I'm doing it to help anybody who will listen. But at the same time, I'm seeing a lot of people using this information to make money, to make themselves wealthy, to look like they are the ones who founded everything. And so you're right, there's just an awful lot of infighting and people who are using other people's work and not giving them credit. And I try and always give credit to whoever I'm quoting and whoever I got something from. I try always. And another thing I try and do that most people have never heard of is I always try and say sometime during an interview that I am not the world's foremost authority on anything, period. I'm just an ordinary man pursuing extraordinary knowledge. There's nothing holy about me, nothing wonderful or magnificent about me. I'm just an ordinary guy who picked up on this dark stuff a long time ago, before most of my audience was even born. And I've been following this kind of a path through the occult world of darkness, lies, deception, how the world really works, who are the judges, why do they wear certain colors, and breaking it all down and trying to explain it to the world. So I know it's been very, very frustrating for me to see other people out making tons of money, making movies, making television shows, and calling me, getting me to send them a lot of information, and meeting with these motion picture and producers and television producers behind the scenes and giving them all kinds of information because I just wanted to help them, whatever they were doing. Then I see they're coming out with big movies, but nobody ever called me and say thank you. Nobody ever sent me 50 cents, period. Mm. Nobody ever in Hollywood has ever given me a nickel or helped me in any way. But they do call me all the time and want me to supply them for information on this or that. And, and the people who produce the Jerry Bruckheimer company that produced the National Treasure and National Treasure 2, they did call me and ask me if I would be a part of the movie. They wanted to have me be a part of the motion picture, and that they also had some research stuff they wanted me to, you know, to work with them and help them on. I refused it and I turned it down, but at least they did ask. And so I've had so many motion picture studios, television, History Channel, Discovery Channel, etc., National Geographics, coming to me and asking me for information on this, that, and the other thing, and I send them all kinds of materials and pictures and documents where to go and where to look. And then I see the movies coming out on television using some of the stuff I sent them, but I didn't get any credit on it, and nobody, I don't see my name anywhere. So I've been doing what I do, but I have finally got to the point where I now know all I want to do is I want to talk to the people who really want to know. I'm not talking to the world to entertain anybody. I'm not an entertainer. I've been in motion pictures. I've been on television. I've spoke to audiences around the world. But I'm not an entertainer. I fancy myself as just an ordinary man pursuing extraordinary knowledge and want to help my fellow man wake up to the reality of the world you live in. And I'm not an authority. And so, right. And so that's what I try and do. Well, I've had all kinds of problems because of that. Because I don't really care about making money and being a star. I'm not interested to be a self-centered, egotistical, movie star who thinks that they run the world, like the Robert De Niro's and all the other silly-ass people who think that they are invincible. I'm just an ordinary man who cares about my life and about my family and about the country I live in. And I'm trying to help my fellow man to educate himself. So that's all I'm doing.
Well, right. I mean, but, and look, I took a similar attitude. I'm one of those people who wasn't even born when you started speaking. I mean, I was born in 1972. So he laughs because, what were you, 31 by then? I mean, you were 31. I just came into the world. But, you know, even during my own journey, right, I don't consider myself an expert on any of this stuff, but I am a student at all times, and I also intend to impart anything that I learn of value to others. So I want to make this an exchange where there's, you know, a student and teacher relationship, because a lot of people can be your teacher throughout life, as you well know.
Oh, heavens yes. Heavens yes. I mean,
and that
you
exchange,
learn some of the most important things you'll learn in this world are from your enemies, and from very bad people. I've been in the company of some people who would turn your hair white. But they told me things that I would never, ever be privy to know. But I happened to be at the wrong place, at the wrong spot, at the wrong time to be in the company of some severely powerful people who were profoundly evil. But the things I heard them say and saw, and with my own eyes saw what they did, and they trusted me and they befriended me, and I tried to show that I, you know, you want to be my friend, I will be your friend. It doesn't mean I'm married to you and I love what you do. But if you're kind and courteous to me, I'm trying to be kind and courteous to you. But I know what's going on here.
Oh, yeah.
I know what I saw.
Oh, yeah. And well, so see, that's, see, that's just, yeah, that's, you know, that's the thing about it, too, is a lot of people don't understand that. I've seen people criticize you for making a statement like that, and I say, listen, you know, first of all, I'm not as, as experienced or as much diverse in my knowledge base as Jordan is, but I'll tell you something, I share this experience with him. Now, why? I haven't been in the upper echelons of power or around somebody who is extremely powerful, but I'll tell you who I have gotten to know before. And that was the guys that you were talking about a little earlier, some of the, let's call them Italian businessmen, who, you know, listen, there was a courtesy between myself and some of these guys at certain points, and I got to be able to speak to them, quite frankly, and I was able to have interactions, let's call them, where, listen, yep, I'm not celebrating what it is they're doing, but they were also quite blunt and honest with me about a lot of things.
That's,
I mean,
right,
not even good people, I'm saying, and I'm not trying to celebrate them or say that, listen, but they are a lot more honest than politicians.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
That's right.
And they are a little more direct about what it is they do. I mean, I make jokes sometimes, Jordan, on this show, you know, where I explain that you pay your extortion money to, you know, your local Italian businessman and your store doesn't get burned down. You pay your extortion money to your local government and you still don't have a guarantee. Okay.
Well, more, yeah, but that's what Al Capone said. He started what he called an assurance company, not insurance, assurance. It's an assurance company. And what do you mean assurance? Well, if you don't pay me, I'm going to burn your business down. So I will assure you nothing will happen to you if I get paid every month. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's an assurance payment.
But those guys at least stuck to their agreements, you understand?
Yeah, I understand.
You know, so, and that was the thing about it, is that I never quite understood. And meanwhile, I got into, you know, deeply into investigating the Kennedy assassination and, you know, that which happened on November 22nd, 1963, which was not only a historical, event, you know, of mammoth proportion, but also, was a ritualistic thing. And a lot of people don't understand how,
right,
I can believe both at the same time, but it's true. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And people wanted an investigation into certain things. And I handed over research to people who went on to make money and all kinds of things. And I didn't get the thank yous either. I don't care. You understand? I didn't mind that because I wanted people to get the information. I wanted them to get it correct. And this is how these two things tie together, by the way. Just,
no,
so,
I know.
What happened was, you know, there are people that are writers and they're scholars and they're, you know, authors of one type or another, and that's their profession. They were not of the certain level of courage, okay, to step into the Viper's den, which was to go. I mean, I went and I visited guys who were convicted of multiple murders in prison. I sat down with individuals who were still free, who I knew very well, had large body counts on them. But I would sit down and speak with them because I could. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a fear of it because I knew there was a way that we had a way of interacting where, like you said, listen, I'm your friend. You're my friend. That's that. You don't got to celebrate what I do and I don't got to celebrate what you do, but we can have a friendship here. And,
well, yeah. And if when you're talking to me, you show courtesy to me and respect for my person and my age and who I am and you treat me with decency. Well, then I will treat you the same way. It's only reciprocal. You know?
Right.
One man treats another one with respect. Well, then both respect each other. That doesn't mean I love you and I'm married to you, or I'm celebrating what you do, but you're very kind and decent to me, and I'm trying to be kind and decent to you. Mm. So what?
But I gotta say, I understand guys who, you know, don't live in such a world of hypocrisy. You know what I mean? I understand them much better. I'm not saying that I appreciate them or feel entirely safe at all times, but I feel a lot safer in the company of somebody that I know will lay out what they're going to do. I mean, that's another interesting point here. The elite class does have that mentality. I mean, gangsters will tell you what they're going to do. I mean, pretty much, you get a warning most times. That's what's going to happen. You're interfering with my business, my day, whatever. This is what's going to happen. You get told once, and then it happens.
That's right.
You don't get that kind of courtesy with a politician, because they may one day agree and say, listen, I've created a policy. Here's a piece of paper. I've agreed to this. I voted for it. I've gotten my friends to vote for it. And then give them a little bit of time, and the winds shift a little bit, and they decide, well, we're going to now go another way and vote a different way and change their positions, and you see them flipping and flopping all over the place.
That's right.
What they do. But when you're dealing with a guy who is a real gangster, that's not how it runs, you know?
Nope.
And I think that this is something that the elite class, I'm not sure if the elite class got it from the gangsters or the gangsters got it from the elite class, but one way or another, this is a shared, characteristic. Am I right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I've been there. I've been there and seen things with my own eyes that I would never and could never and have no idea in the world of ever saying anything to the grave. I have no intention to ever say the stuff I could that would blow your mind. I've been in the company of people that would scare you if you knew and saw. But I am not about to say anything about anybody, period, because I'm smart enough to know I'd like to see the sun come up tomorrow morning. And some of the things I could tell you about your religious leaders, about your political leaders, and some of the leaders of social or groups, you know, all of these different black revolutionary groups, or my God, I could tell you stories that blow your mind. And I was there. I saw it. And so, but I am not about to. And I wish I could. I wish I could tell the world what I've really seen. I wish I could, because I would enjoy. It's some kind of a professional jealousy in my spirit. I would enjoy watching the world go out and try and throw up when they hear the real truth about the people that they've given their whole life to, given their whole money to and support, and find out who these people really are and what they're actually doing that I saw them do. So I said to you, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I'll give you an example. If you're going to ship a package or a box across the country, you go out in the shed and go out in the garage and get some rope and you tie up the box with the rope. And then you mail it, and most likely that'll be sufficient, and it'll be okay. But if you're going to take that rope and walk off and go up on the top of a 10-story building and tie that rope off on one of the big pipes on the top of the building, and you're going to hang on that rope, you're going to hang your life on that rope, then you have better check the integrity of that rope you're hanging your life on. So the point is, if you're going to hang your life on some organization or some religious group or some cult or some group that's going to do so much for you, you're going to hang your life on it, you better go back and do some homework and find out who the hell this company and this group really are and where they've actually come from.
Right.
You're going to spend your whole life in Jehovah's Witnesses believing you have the truth, and you have no idea in the world why they left Pittsburgh and went into the Bronx and then went into New York. New York as the Empire State. And then they go into Brooklyn. Is there anybody left on the earth that doesn't know Brooklyn is a mafiosi gangster hangout in New York? And that's where the Watchtower and Bible Tract Society operates, and they owned all the docks. They didn't rent the docks. They owned them. Mm-hmm. And even the mafia could not own the docks. Yeah, they ran the docks, and they were in control of a lot of the work on the docks, but they don't own the docks. Well, Jehovah's Witnesses own the docks. They own them. Mm-hmm. How does that happen? You better find out how the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Worldwide Church of God, the Christadelphians, and all of the other York Rite secret society cults that have been set up in America, financed out of England. You better find out the connection between the religious orders in America today and MI5 and MI6 out of London. Mm-hmm. This is a whole world of knowledge you have never been privy to know anything about. And I'm sitting and watching this country go under. And the people have no idea in the world what's actually coming down on America soon.
You know,
you better wake up and find out what religion is all about.
You know, I once lived in a town, and this is one of the religious organizations you didn't mention, but I once lived in a town where you could own the house, but you could not own the property. Even according to the, you know, very easily accessible public paperwork. I mean, obviously, when you go to take a look at a deed in America today, you'll find that you're actually the tenant, not the owner anyway.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But even in that case, you cannot be the tenant of the property even in a town in New Jersey. And I found it very strange, and I wanted to know why, and I started to look into it, and I find that the Methodist Church actually owns it. The town, I'm saying. Okay? And this is literally where they do the camp meeting. You've seen the Camp Meeting Association,
yeah.
Right? Publicized. Well, they have the camp meeting tents in this town. It's a little place called Ocean Grove. I kid you not. Where the Methodist Church effectively owns the property in Ocean Grove. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything nefarious by that. I'm just saying that I think people are unaware of who actually owns what in a lot of places and why.
Anytime you hear the word Grove, you better wake up and back up, because you just missed something. When you hear the word Grove, like Bohemian Grove, And there's a lot of companies called Royal Grove and this Grove and that Grove, because a grove today we think of as a group of trees, a whole area, a particular kind of trees, and it's called an orange grove, or a grove is a bunch of trees. No, that's not what the word grove meant originally. You go back to the original interpretation of the word grove. A grove was a male erection. Period. You need to understand what's going on here when we talk about the church was founded at this particular grove or that grove or Myrtle Grove Church or this Grove Church. Grove was a male phallic, an erection. You better wake up and find out the name of the tomb with religion. I can sit and talk with you for 8 hours straight on stuff you have never heard about the church. People go to church and have no idea in the world where the word church comes from. You know, and you talk about Jesus the Christ and have no comprehension at all what the word Christ really means.
Well, to my mind,
where did it actually come from?
Well, to my mind, the word church is really very similar to, I think, the Greek word for circus. Which
that's exactly right.
Leads to the goddess Circe, in my estimation.
That's precisely right. That's precisely the point.
Now, what's interesting about the Methodist thing, now somebody's going to go, why is he picking on the Methodists? I'll tell you why.
We'll just talk about them for the moment.
We'll just talk about them for a second. And my last point on this whole thing about the Methodists owning Ocean Grove is that here's the thing.
Ancient Grove. Boy, That's really power-packed, that term.
Right. What's fascinating here, though, is if you open a Methodist Bible in any church, you will find that it is subservient to, ready, the Catholic Church.
Yep.
That is, you know, a lot of people think of it, well, that's not a Catholic church. They don't have the same rituals, and sure they don't. And by the way, you want to sit and unpack something, I'm sure I could sit here for 5 hours with Jordan just talking about Catholic rituals as they appear today. But let's not, just, we'll go over this point quickly. But the thing is that the Methodist Church is just an arm of the Catholic Church. So
of course,
that's
why. Exactly correct.
Anyway, but when you take a look at these words like the Grove and, like you said, Bohemian Grove, anything that's named Grove, and take a look. You're right. But it also strikes me that it's similar to the word grave.
That's right.
Which, you know, again, gets into a whole other area. And the symbolism, like I said, it's everywhere, and yet it is completely misunderstood, and most people take certain things for granted because they don't know the etymology of the words. They don't know why the words are being used. They simply accept them and are under a delusion, actually, Jordan. And I wonder if you would speak to this, because, you know, they say we speak English. We don't.
Say that again?
They say sometimes that we speak English.
Oh, yeah.
We don't. First of all, I'm not sure what to call this language, but it's actually not my language or your language.
Nope.
And all these different societies have their own language. For instance, you know, in the legal profession, right, there is a legal, it's something they call legalese.
It's called legalese. That's right.
And in that
legalese is what lawyers speak.
Right.
And so that's a whole new story. When you talk, you know, when you start talking about words, because first of all, I've heard lectures by people from Oxford University, teachers in English, and from Cambridge, lectures by these guys who know the English language, and they say the English language was a designer language. It was actually designed by the monks in the monasteries. Going back hundreds and hundreds of years, it was a designed language, purposely designed to give you a frame of mind and an understanding of the way power works. And so the English were planning on running the earth. And so they were developing something called the English language. And then you begin to see the difference between English and British. And what is British as opposed to English? And my God, there's so much we could talk about and so many ways we could go with this. Because British goes back to the word bereth, B-R-E-T-H, a bereth. And a bereth is a contract. And so we have a bereth is a contract in Hebrew. And therefore, we have something called ish, I-S-H. Ask any Jewish rabbi or any Jew understands the Hebrew. What is ish in Hebrew? I-S-H. That is a man. But ish can be more than one man or a man. It can be multiple or one. So man is ish. I-S-H. So a contract is a bereth, and you put the word ish, and it becomes a berethish or British. British is the man of a contract. That's why in all business now, on the international maritime British law of banking around the world, any business you do, you sign a contract. Brit, a bit, Brit. A British is a contract man. The man of the contract. So he is the one that brought into the world the idea of paperwork and contracts, is the British. And so, you know, I don't even know where to go with this, because no matter which way I can see to go to explain this, it's going to take me another 5 hours.
Well,
no matter which way we go down the line, I can explain the banking, the governmental systems, insurance companies, the police department, why we have the you know, departments of government. All of this has been planned before your grandmother was born.
That's right.
And you were born into a system, and you just naturally accept it the way any puppy or any pet cat, when they're born, the pets just accept what the mother tells them. They just accept the life that they live, and the dog never knows how to think for himself. He just does what a dog does. He just goes along to get along. And so, and he's always taken care of. That's all he cares about from cradle to the grave. So when you're born, that brings in the church. And then when you get married, well, that brings in the church. And when you die, that brings in the church. So the point being is that the church is dominating politics. And therefore, we were supposed to have some kind of a division between church and state, when actually, in point of fact, the church is the state. It's a religion. It goes back to Rome. My God, wake up.
No, absolutely right. And look, I'll try to sort of bottle that really fast, because you said English is a designer language. Well, you want proof of that, you the listener, not you, Jordan, obviously. But you the listener, you want proof of that, it's very simple. What would you do if you were to attempt, just imagine in your own mind, that you wished to develop a worldwide language, something that could be adaptable to various cultures? Well, you might bring some of their recognizable terminology into said language, so that it kind of has a universal point of entry for each of these different cultures that are brought together under it. And lo and behold, well, what do we find in the English language? We find German, we find Spanish, we find French, we find terms from across the planet were inserted into this language we call English. Am I right or wrong?
That's exactly right. And I could tell you some more stuff that you've never heard that it's going to be very difficult to understand and to believe. But I am of the opinion that the word German, which relates to a people we call Germans, is directly connected to something called Israel, and some people we refer to as Jews. I think Jews and German are the same thing. I think that there's a hidden connection between the world of, quote, Jews, end quote, and Germans, end quote. Who are and who was Germani, and from where did the Germani develop the concepts and belief systems and the structures of government in Germany, which are identical to what we call Judaism today? And then when you go back to Adolf Hitler developing what he called Nazism, no, it was not developed by Adolf Hitler. He learned it from a Jewish man named Rosenberg. Anybody who's ever read anything in history about Nazism knows that the man who Adolf Hitler listened to and was guided by was a man named Arthur Rosenberg, who was purely Jewish. And he's the one that explained to Adolf Hitler how to set up the Nazi party and what the symbols should be. The swastika and the blood flag and all of that stuff was developed by a Jewish man named Rosenberg. And so today, the concept in Judaism is that they were a holy people set apart from the world. They were a holy race. Well, that's what the Nazis said. They were a holy race. They were a blood ritual holy race, and they only married within themselves. Well, the Jews had the same thing. They only married Jews. They would not marry Gentiles and all the people, the lesser people on the earth. They only married among themselves. Well, that's Nazism. The Nazis said the same thing, that they were a holy priesthood. They were a holy people. And their symbol was the swastika. Well, the swastika, we now know, anybody can look in the dictionary and look up the word swastika, and you will see it is a symbol for the sun rolling across the sky is a swastika. Go back and look at the symbol for the ancient symbol for the sun. It was always in all the ancient cultures of the world. The ancient cultures always symbolized the sun as a swastika. The two equal crosses with the legs, and it was walking across the sky. And so today we have the swastika, which represents the sun. But then when you go to the Jewish religion, what is the Jewish symbol for the sun? It's a swastika. It's in the synagogues in Israel. You'll see on the floors of the of synagogues in Israel swastikas. Why? Because the most holy God to the Jewish people back then in the ancient world was the sun. And so they didn't want to use the word sun. We're worshiping the sun because that's Christian. Christians are worshiping God's sun, the light of the world. But the Jews said, well, we're going to worship the sun too, but we're the first ones. And so they worship something called Yahweh or the Tetragrammaton. So they took the word for God and put it into a secret word called Tetragrammaton, the four letters for the name of God, which is so holy they can't, they don't want to pronounce it. Why? Because it represents the Egyptian sun god, Tetragrammaton. Tetra is four, gramma is letters, gramma is a letter. And so the Tetragrammaton in Judaism, the symbol for the word for God, is four letters. That's why they call it tetragramma. Four tetra and gramma letters. But Aton is called Tetragramma Aton. What was the Aton? Who was the Aton? Look it up in the dictionary. A-T-O-N was the god of the sun in Egypt. Right. And what was his symbol? The swastika. Wake up and understand Judaism, Nazism, religion, Catholicism, Rome, all of this stuff is connected behind the scenes, and you haven't got the faintest idea in the world of what's really going on in this country and around the world. But wake up, it's coming, it's on its way, and I'm telling you, when you begin to look at the words and the terms that are used in religion, if you go back to the old ancient world, you'll find out incredible stuff about religion that I think is fascinating. I love to do a whole 2 hours just on the occult or hidden words in world religion and where they actually, in point of fact, really came from. Well, and why you are having the symbols and the emblems and the rituals and religions that you think are so holy, you have no idea in the world what they really represent.
No, you're absolutely correct. Now, one thing to add in here, though, when you're talking about Rosenberg being the influence over Hitler, is there was one other influence, rather curious, over the organization of that party, and this was an outcast, allegedly outcast priest, Catholic priest, who wore an interesting symbol. What was the thing on all of his accoutrements? The Red Cross, in fact.
Of course. Yeah.
And he fills in whatever Hitler did not get from Rosenberg, he got from this guy. I can't remember his name right now. But but you know who I'm talking about.
It was also a Jesuit priest named Father Stempel, S-T-E-M-P-L-E. Father Stempel wrote Mein Kampf. Adolf Hitler did not write Mein Kampf. Father Stempel wrote Mein Kampf. Father Stempel was a Jesuit priest. This was in the New York Times. It's been quoted in different books about Nazism that Hitler did not write Mein Kampf. Father Stempel wrote Mein Kampf, and he was a Jesuit priest behind Adolf Hitler. And this is why the Pope wears the Jewish yarmulke, and all the cardinals wear the Jewish yarmulke. And all the symbols of Judaism is in Catholicism. And Catholicism worships the sun, the sun god Aton. Well, so did the Jews. Tetragramma Aton. I'm telling you, there's a big story here that you better wake up and wake up to the reality that your world and your country and your family and your very life and the life of your children is in jeopardy because, as the Bible says, my people are dying from a lack of knowledge.
Well,
you think you know what's going on? You better do some homework, son.
No, absolutely, and I agree with you. And at all times, no matter what you have learned up to this point, folks, there is always more. The scope and scale of this is immense. I mean, Jordan, you got to admit that even after half a century, on occasion you stumble across new information or a new connection.
Oh, you that, better believe it.
You know, well, let me get to something here really quick. That you also have, I think it's still open, the Research Society over at JordanMaxwellShow.com, right?
Yes, yes. And that I would like to talk about for a second. I have on my website, which is, as you said, and thank you for doing that, making the point that my website is only one. I only have one website, and it's called Jordan Maxwell Show. If you don't add the word show, that's not me, because there's other people who are out there who are using my name, but it's not me, and so you're not dealing with me. So go to Jordan Maxwell Show. I had to create my own website again. And so when you go to JordanMaxwellShow.com, you will see on the home page it says Research Society. And so you can click on that Research Society link, and it will take you to my personal second website I have that I started. It's called the Research Society because it's all of my research from over the years, all the symbols and dark stuff. Evil stuff that you've never known before. What the words mean, what the terms mean, what do these symbols mean, and where do they actually come from? And then you start seeing some really adult, off-the-wall stuff you've never been told before. So I put all of that onto a website and called it the Research, Jordan Maxwell's Research website, the Research Society. And it's only a one-time contribution to help me pay the webmaster and keep this website on the air. I don't make much of anything from it, but I need to keep the webmaster working. And so it's an extraordinary collection of dark stuff you've never heard. And also on that research website, it's got all the things that I recommend, all the people I recommend, all the books and lectures I recommend, and a lot of the most important lectures I have ever heard in my life, I reproduce them on my research website. So you don't have to go looking for the most powerful, off-the-wall, strange lectures of stuff that will knock you out. I've already put them on my research society. I'll tell you where to go, who the best are, where the best books are. It's all on my research society. So go on Jordan Maxwell's show and join my research society.
No, absolutely. Begin at JordanMaxwellShow.com. That is where you start. But if you want to get really deep, I would suggest you go to the Research Society link and go on in there. You know, Jordan Maxwell has assembled a great deal of material, and I think you're still assembling material.
Oh, God, yeah. I've got over 5 terabytes. That's 5,000 gigs. Of research, documents, pictures, audio, video, strange stuff that you've never heard before. But my webmaster is only able to do so much in a day. And he's very, very good, so he does it right. It takes him a little time. But, boy, he does everything beautifully, and it always works. And but he's got tons of stuff to yet put on there. So, but it's massive now. Most people think that it'll take them a lifetime to go through it. Well, I got news for you. I got 5,000 gigabytes more to go on. So just hang on. There's going to be a lot more than what's there now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is that, you know, if somebody were to go in there and say, okay, well, I see all of what I see, but that's I'm just letting you know that it is an ongoing project. That it will continue to evolve. So you go in and you pay the one-time fee to go in there, like you said, just to be able to maintain the work. Because it's a lot of work. I mean, I maintain this website here, and not an easy thing to do, quite honestly. And
that's
I don't
right.
have, you know, remotely close to the amount of material that you have. I mean, 5 terabytes?
Yeah, 5 terabytes more than I want to get on. I've got 5 terabytes more sitting on my computer right now that I've sent to my my webmaster to put on my website. But he, being human and just one person, can only put on so much per day because he's such a professional. He doesn't throw anything on. You look at my website and you'll see it's very highly intelligently put together and it works flawlessly every time. Why? Because my webmaster is a genius when it comes to computers. He appreciates what I'm doing, and when he puts anything on my website, it works every time. But he takes time to do it right. And so that's why it's taking a little time to put on 5,000 gigs. But he's working on it every day, little by little. So.
Yeah, well, and a great thing, like I said, for as a resource, you know, just amazing. I'll tell you something. Mm-hmm. When you said you want to do a solid 2 hours on religion, the immediate thought to me was, let's do that coming up soon.
Oh, I'd love to.
You know, and really, I mean, I want to just stay there, not derail the conversation. Let's just go for it. I mean, I'll ask questions as usual, but I want to stay focused on it. I would love to do that with you because there have been things that I thought I knew very well until recently regarding, you know, people's holy books and what the meaning of a lot of the things that people participate in ritualistically. I thought I had a good handle on it, and I got to be honest with you, the more I explore, the stranger some of this gets. And
look at you're killing me. You're killing me by this, because this is exactly what I'd love to do. I'd love to do a whole series on the occult dark side of world manipulation through words and terms in religion. Where these words and terms come from? What do these symbols actually mean? And then when you use these words like Jesus Christ, you don't know what Christ means. And then when you say that Jesus was the anointed and the King Solomon was anointed, do you know what the anointed means? Have you any idea when you say that that this priest or that priest or the Pope was anointed, or some queen, the Queen of England, was anointed? Do you know what that means? Because if you did, you wouldn't be using it in public in front of other people. You better go back and find out what religion is really all about. Talking about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Well, I got to tell you, even looking at the standard structure of a commonly built church, when one examines the architecture, which is a strange subject, but believe it or not, when you examine the architecture of it, I think that most of your average church-going people would not even set foot in that building just based on the architecture if they knew what was actually being presented to them. Because guess what? I know Jordan has brought up sex a few times during this conversation, but believe it or not, that's why churches kind of look the way they do, and I'll leave
that's
it at that, because you know what I'm talking about.
and not only that, but the body of a church, I don't care whose church, but the body, the central body of a church is referred to in the dictionary as a nave, N-A-V-E, nave. The nave of a church is the central building of a church, and this is where we get the Department of the Navy. It's a maritime admiralty, navy. And this is why the Vatican is called the Holy See. The Holy See, Air Maritime Admiralty, the Navy, the United States Navy. My God, we need to do some a whole series just on the occult. And the word occult is a Latin word meaning hidden. So right. Just on the hidden significance of religion in America and the world today. For the first time, let's tell the people what it really means. My God, what a revolution that would cause!
I would be more than happy to participate in that with you if you let me, because I'm telling you now, I think this is exactly the kind of thing that needs to be spoken about at this time. You know, a few years ago, it seems to me like a lot of people were not able to hear a great many of the things that we have had to say over the years.
Yeah.
And I know that you've held back to some degree regarding some things, you know, like if you go to and look at JordanMaxwellShow.com and you go into the Research Society, that goes a lot deeper than what you heard on this show, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of things that, you know, you might have been a little bit hesitant about discussing in the past, but as you've said on this show, look, you're getting toward the time when, I mean, and I don't say this with any disrespect, understand, but you are getting toward a time when you know there are many less days in front of you than are behind you, and maybe you're not quite as hesitant or worried about certain things, not everything, but certain things that you could speak about that you might have been in years past. And I adopt the notion that at no time should I embrace fear anyway. So I have no fear about going forward with anything that you want to discuss. So so I'm telling you right now that that I would love to do the presentation with you and ask some relevant questions.
Well,
and
one thing I would guarantee you, if we do this, I will guarantee you, I will tell you things about religion you have not even thought of, never even came into your mind to make the comparison. I could tell you things about religion that you would not believe, and where it really came from, and what the encyclopedias tell you, and what the words mean, and what the symbols mean. It's just so overwhelming, I don't know where to start. And I'm 78 years old. I don't know where to start. If you want to talk about religion, yeah, then give me the chance. Give me a whole series of shows, and I'll tell you things about your church, your religion, and your religious beliefs that you have never heard.
Well,
incredible stuff.
I absolutely accept, and I think a good place to begin would be with the origin of Moses.
Oh, because don't get me started on Moses.
There is a whole story. Yeah, there's a whole story there that I am just starting to wrap my mind around that I think is kind of frightening to most people who take that as, excuse me for saying this, but who take it as gospel, that the story of Moses is one of these cornerstones of their faith and all of that. I think they don't necessarily recognize who Moses actually was and, you know, and a few other things.
And talk about all three religions today, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Why three main religions? Why three? There could have been six major religions or 14 major religions. Why three? And why is it all three religions, their God is a triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, Brahma, Vishnu, Siva, Osiris, Isis, Horus? Why is there three always, and then the three major religions, and their God is always three? What's going on with this three? One, two, and three, and where does that come from? And I've got all kinds of questions we can ask for 2 hours first, and then I can spend the next 8 hours answering them, because I'm telling you, the story of Moses will blow your mind.
Right.
Absolutely, and knock you out.
I think that's a good place to begin. And of course, you know, the idea of the Trinity, also one has to look at the Triton. Also
right.
One has to look at, you know, the various uses of the number three and why that is significant. Because believe it or not, numerology, although some people have, again, hijacked this concept and used it for whatever fun and games they're playing, there is a serious language being spoken in numerology as well.
Bet on it. All the scientists and philosophers of the world knew the whole universe, as Albert Einstein, is based on numbers, numerology, numbers. Even one of the five books of the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, one is called Numbers.
That's correct.
You need to understand numbers, numerology.
Right.
And,
But this, believe it or not, is the end of our time together. Jordan Maxwell has been with me for a full 2 hours, and we end on these interesting notes that should begin to rattle around some questions in your mind if you haven't considered them before. But I think this entire conversation could begin the process of somebody asking questions. But in the last, you know, say 45 seconds here, Jordan, is there anything you'd like to say in parting? I say to everybody, go to JordanMaxwellShow.com, that whole phrase together, JordanMaxwellShow.com, and begin your exploration if you have not already been there. But what would you like to say on our way out the door, sir?
I would like to say that the world you live in does not work the way you think it does. There is nothing in your life that is actually working the way you think it does. So you better go back to your home.
Absolutely true. Just like many of the things that Jordan had to say tonight are rock solid absolute truth. When we weren't joking and speculating about a few things. But even that is worthy of discussion. Jordan Maxwell was with me for 2 hours tonight, and I am done here on this Woden's Day. But I will be back tomorrow night on Thursday. Don't worry about it. Anyway, no matter who you are, where you are, I hope you're well. And remember this, I am merely Ocelli. All of you guys who participate in this show one way or another, whether you're Jordan Maxwell or a chatter in the chat room, you are the effect. Have a good night.